Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, going right into the show tonight. Excuse me. Wow, is all I can say. Get ready and put your seatbelts on. The things going on today are just beyond recognition. I'm going to talk about the situation in England and Northern Europe. And, of course, most of you know about this right now, but it is already affecting us here in the United States. I just, before the show, received a message, and this comes from an official announcement from Mountain House. And, of course, I recently became a dealer with Mountain House because I saw somewhat, you might say, the end coming. And we still are shipping and able to ship and will be for some time. The lead time has grown a bit and is going to grow longer in the future. So people who have orders in already are the lucky ones. People who are ordering in the future, we will still be shipping, but it'll take a number of weeks. We'll keep people posted. But the Mountain House put out an official notice today to distributors that they are rationing freeze-dried food because of the overwhelming demand that they have received in past weeks and months. So I'll talk a little bit more about that. But it is still available. It is still being distributed. The warehouse that I'm connected to is still well supplied. It's a matter of getting the products in the shipping and getting them out. I knew this was coming. That's why I put this on my page, because I wanted as many people to have access to this as possible. And people just smell the writing on the wall, if you want to put it that way, rotten fish in Denmark, however you want to put it. And anyway, I'll go into that a little bit later. That's not the main science topic tonight. I will be talking about hurricanes versus climate change, and this is the situation right now we're seeing in Northern Europe. And then I'm asking the question, did the BP oil spill in the Gulf really cause the conditions we're now seeing in England, where the Gulf Stream has stalled, the stream that provides actually New York, the state of New York, and the upper, all the way up to Maine, Nova Scotia, and then it turns east and it warms the British Isles all the way up into Denmark, Northern Europe, and the Scandinavian countries. That current of warm water from the ocean that comes up from the Gulf, part of it comes out of the Gulf and part of it comes up from the Caribbean. This has stalled. This conveyor belt of warm surface water has stalled and is no longer bringing warm water. The situation in England is being drastically underreported. I just went through web pages. The conditions in England right now, that it is going to get colder. It warmed up for about one day, and now it's going to get colder again and go into the deep freeze with more snow on the way. There's no way that this can, that these people can handle this throughout the next months. And there's no way to get supplies to them. I'm just giving you an example of natural disasters. And then one has to ask the question, was this done on purpose? You know, that is speculation. But it's important to speculate in that line, because now with the true understanding of climate change and what causes climates, and the understanding that the heat conveyor belts coming up from Florida and the Gulf of Mexico is what actually heats those areas, could somebody have predicted or understood that by allowing the oil to flow into the Gulf of Mexico, it would stall the current in the Gulf of Mexico, which drives the current around the tip of Florida and out into the Atlantic, which ultimately drives the warm water up into that conveyor belt, up into the surface, which then has for hundreds of years gone up to England, allowed them a much more pleasant climate than they should be receiving. Remember that England is literally the same latitude as Moscow. And of course, Moscow, being inland, receives severe winters, some of the more severe winters around, for heavily populated areas. It's the equivalent of central Canada. But, of course, with that warm ocean current, England was receiving the benefit and for centuries had a very good climate. I'll be talking also about some known storms that have moved through the British Isles and up all the way into Denmark, up through the Northern Europe and into Scandinavia. But those storms, the great wind storms of Northern Europe and the English Isles, have come through about every 100 years possibly. But they come and they go. They don't linger for months at a time. And they are just simply big storms. And I'm sure we could relate those to weather conditions in the solar system. But the point is that with the situation right now in England, possibly it's not good to speculate whether this is man-made or whatever, but it's very clearly the cause being caused by the BP oil spill. When the BP oil spill first occurred, almost immediately, and there were many talk show hosts that came out and started talking about this and got information initially from the publications of the Russian scientists that study the Gulf Stream and the other current ocean currents of the world. John Moore was somebody who recognized this early and talked about it. The fact that they said very early on, this oil spill is visibly, from satellite data, slowing down the Gulf Stream current, which feeds that ocean Atlantic current, which drives the warm surface current up towards England. And so, of course, the wind blows in from the western side, warming the island. Right now, I would estimate that the conditions in England are very severe. And I heard the other day they said 9 people had died from the storm, and I find that extremely hard to believe that the number would be that small. I would figure that 9 people would have died by the first day, given the fact that the English Isles are very unprepared for this kind of weather. Things like the water pipes are not deep enough. They don't have the heating or insulating conditions. I live, in Minnesota part of the time, and sometimes in the winter, and we're prepared. I mean, we're prepared for cold weather and for snow, but in the English Islands, they are not prepared. They don't have the equipment, they don't have the infrastructure, and so once you have people with poor food supply running out, last week the gas stations ran out of gasoline. You have entire populations, vast populations, that are simply unheard of. Again, there was a satellite photo distributed showing the English Islands, and the water is actually freezing out into the ocean away from the island, and snow is building up on this ice shelf now that is surrounding England. The satellite photo had to put a dotted line to outline England because the snow cover extends out into the oceans now. This is an extremely severe situation, and above all, the news media is not talking about it. I just went through the news media. There's no mention any place. It's like this isn't happening. This has fallen off the map. The news media simply is not covering this. So at any rate, I'll be talking a bit more about hurricanes, climate change, and individual storms. I'll be talking about some individual storms throughout history going back to the 1300s. First, I want to talk a little bit about the Christmas Star. I was on a guest, as I am regularly, on a show by James Jancic out of Chicago, Feet to Fire. I'm on there once every month. I go the third Sunday of every month. And anyway, we're going to do a Christmas, part of his Christmas special on December 26th. But I just want to mention a couple things relative to the situation regarding Christmas. Where is my sheet of paper here? Where did that go? Oh, replacement Christmas stories. I made a list. I started going through the department stores and just made a quick list, and this list could grow. I'm sure everybody out there can think of one or two or maybe three imitation Christmas stories or replacement Christmas stories that are taking place of the real story. And of course, Christmas, no matter who, what denomination or what background you have, what culture, what sect, what country you come from, whatever your background, Christmas means one thing. It represents the birth of Christ. We've got Santa Claus and the 12 reindeer. We got Christmas trees. We've got gifts. We've got the Thanksgiving Day parade at Macy's, the day after which it's the biggest shopping day before Christmas. Right now, I just received an article where Christmas in England, they're considering calling it off. These are the retailers in England. They're considering calling off Christmas because people can't get out and shop. Now, how absurd. How can you call off Christmas? This has gone on for thousands of years, the celebration of this holiday. And it's not because people couldn't get out to shop at the department store. You have the Nutcracker Suite. You have people writing Xmas with X in the place of Christ. Snoopy the dog, there's the Grinch that stole Christmas, the Velveteen Rabbit, Scrooge, the Christmas Carol. You have the Miracle on, 34th Street, I forget the movie with, on and on and on. Everything but the real story. So I did a little experiment, went with a very good friend of mine to some of the stores, and looked for any indication of something that people might sell related to Christ and the birth of Christ or anything related to what the true holiday was. In one craft store, I found one box on a back shelf up high. It was on 50% sale, and it was the nativity scene. And so I bought it. I bought the only thing in all of these stores that had anything to do with the real holiday. So I just want to mention that because, I love all of the Christmas things that go on. They're all wonderful. But it just is amazing the amount of effort that's been put into destroying it as for the true reason for the holiday. I also did go to a Christmas presentation put on by a choir. And it was held in a church, big cathedral, actually. And I thought to myself, here we are at Christmas. It's a day of peace and et cetera. But just think of all of the damage that has been done in the name of Christmas. And I thought, just listen to the beautiful music, the harmony, the choirs, and all of the peaceful sounds and the amazing amount of poetry, etc., that has occurred, and artistic work that has occurred over the centuries and thousands of years related to Christmas. And then you look at people who are designing bombs, better electronics to guide bombs into areas to blow people up, the wars that are going on around the world nonstop. It's just incredible to see the diversity, the dichotomy, the polarization of the human race. And so you just have to wonder what side of that diversity or polarization are people on. People think, well, we need to protect ourselves against terrorism, but then you find that the terrorism is actually being created to promote government policy or international banking, whatever the case may be. Anyway, I don't want to get too far off on a tangent, but I want to come back and talk a little bit about the Christmas Star. A number of years ago, I did a couple show Christmas special talking about the true meaning of the Christmas Star. And the day afterwards, the day after I did that special, Internet, and I did quite a bit of promotion for that show, so it was heard quite extensively around the world, and as I recall, I actually rented some extra airtime to air that show. But at any rate, that's a number of years ago. The day afterwards, well, let's go to the day before. If you did a search the day before I did that special on the Christmas Star, nothing came up. Just a one reference possibly to my special that was coming up. The day after I did that special, talking about the fact that the Christmas Star had to be a comet, a very unusual comet, and probably the unusual nature of that comet was that it had two companions. Not one, but two. So this was an extremely rare, unusual comet, something that set it apart from every other astrological, astronomical type figure out there. Something that had been expected for thousands of years, and when it came, it was very much recognized by the three kings, by Herod, by other people, the astrologers of Herod. He went out and had the firstborn of males of the entire country killed because this sign came in the sky. So it had to be something very distinctive, very unusual, and very recognizable by the people in power. So anyway, the next day after my Christmas special, if you did a web search on the term Christmas Star, and as I said, the day before, you would have found nothing. There were over 3,000 references. We stopped counting. Over 3,000 references to a misinformation story regarding the Christmas Star, saying it was a planetary alignment. And this then became the standard story. A professor from Notre Dame University, who apparently wasn't even a Christian, put this out and was one of the promoters. But at any rate, a very bizarre follow-up. And then what I did is I had to follow up and do a rejoinder on this topic because of the press that this concept got, that the Christmas Star was somehow a planetary alignment. And I pointed out all of the deficiencies of this planetary alignment story. Planetary alignments occur frequently, 2-3 times a year, so it's not something unusual at all. Planetary alignments only last a couple of hours, 2-4 hours, where they're really well aligned, and certainly not for days and days at a time. The Christmas Star had to last months, because remember that the three kings from the Orient saw it in the East, and then they followed it for months. This wasn't like they jumped in their Mercedes-Benz and quick drove across the desert to get to Bethlehem. No, it took months for them to follow this star to the resting place. And so this is something that had to be in the sky for months. A planetary alignment does not cut it. It doesn't come close to cutting it. The list goes on and on. But at any rate, the fact that they would promote total misinformation about the Christmas Star just shows the amount of effort trying to be put onto destroying the historical nature of Christmas itself. And so, at any rate, I'm not going to go through all of that again. I just wanted to kind of summarize that. On to the next topic. Just a couple of quick news items here. There's a company called SpaceX, which has been working for some time and building rockets now. They have built a rocket. The Falcon 9 just did a test run, went up to 180 miles high, which is a good bit into space. Remember that 60 miles high is the what they call the limit of outer space, where you leave the atmosphere and go out into outer space, about 100 kilometers from the surface of the Earth. So this went about three times the distance of the atmosphere, what is considered the upper atmosphere. And, of course, it's not like a defined line or anything or surface. It gradually fades into outer space. But once you're above 100 miles or 60 miles, something like that, you're pretty much into the vacuum of outer space. So this rocket, the Falcon 9, went up to 180 miles, clearly out into outer space, and very much has the capability of putting objects into orbit. Right now, NASA is subcontracting to Russia to launch all of its personnel and equipment up to the International Space Station. So the point is that the SpaceX Corporation, and I like to see this, I like to see private industry succeeding. This is wonderful. But once again, they're using 50-year-old technology when we know that very high advanced technologies exist for going into space and getting back out of space back down to Earth. So this is just part of the facade that NASA is supporting private industry in watching this rocket with the plume of smoke going up into the sky, and that billions and billions of dollars are necessary for this facade to continue, for it to succeed, making the average person in public think that they have no business in space. It's only the era or the arena of very large, expensive government programs, something that's simply not true. In the background with this program is the kind of hidden fact that the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, is controlling this with a very tight comb. Only companies that are well associated with NASA are allowed to succeed. There are two companies now, but part of the facade is that, as I said, the rocket is the way to go into space. The rockets are not the way to go into space. They never were, never will be. They will never get us anyplace. Out of that rocket of millions of pounds of fuel and material and tubing and metal and composites, out of that, only a few hundred, maybe a few thousand pounds can go into outer space. So it's really simply not the way to go. And if you want to go to another planet, well, you can get there, but it'll take you months, if not years. And if you want to go to another star, forget it. You're not going to get there. So the part of my new book, The Diamond Principle, deals with the issues of going into outer space and how you really should be going into outer space. I'm not going to go into that detail right now. By the way, Monday night, this coming Monday night, December 13th, the peak of the Gemini meteor stream. So if you don't have anything to do, if you can't sleep at night, about 11 o'clock at night, wherever your local time is, go out and just look up. Then good night, the Geminis will produce up to 100 meteors per hour. So you can see the meteorite stream, or the meteor stream, and these are little chunks of debris that come in, remnants of a comet that once passed through the solar system. The other thing is, let me just go quickly through a couple explanations of where these little tiny wayfaring pieces of material come from. Standard science, which of course is outdated and really doesn't hold water, says that they come from comets, the nuclei of comets. In other words, they're burned off as gases come off the comet nucleus, and they form a trail behind the nucleus of the comet. Well, that's a nice story, but the only problem is that the nuclei of comets are not dirty snowballs. So that's the only problem with that. It's simply not true. Where do the meteors really come from as the comets move through the solar system? Well, what really happens is fine particles of dust and grains of sand contain metals. And so what happens is that little piece of metal in that dust particle or in a pebble, whatever, moves into the electric field of the comet nucleus. This is using the plasma discharge comet model, which I developed decades ago, and which is clearly the true nature of comets. But it provides an electric field, a non-uniform electric field, which means that it's stronger near the nucleus and weaker as you get away. So what happens to a piece of metal in such an electric field? Well, it's called the induced electric dipole force. I'll explain that in just a second. But basically, opposite charges attract, like charges repel each other. And so what happens in a piece of metal, which has basically is a conductor, electrons are free to move. And so in a piece of metal in a non-uniform electric field, what happens? The electrons are free to move away from the comet nucleus in the piece of metal, because they're repelled by the charge in the comet nucleus. that is built up from the plasma discharge, explained by the plasma discharge comet model. So the electrons in this little piece of metal, which is locked into a piece of grain or dust or a little pebble, whatever, or sometimes bigger rocks, they can be quite large. But at any rate, what happens in the little speck of metal or little piece of metal in the pebble? Well, the electrons move away from the comet nucleus, leaving the side closest to the comet nucleus with a positive charge. Now, the positive charge is attracted towards the comet nucleus, and guess what? It's just a little bit closer to the comet nucleus than the pool of electrons which has moved away from the comet nucleus. All of this taking place in this little piece of metal locked into a grain of sand or a dust particle or a little pebble out in outer space. So what happens? The plus charge on the close side to the comet nucleus is attracted slightly more force than the electrons on the other side are pushed away. In other words, there's a net attractive force. And this is explained in my books, The Induced Electric Dipole Force. It's a very well understood principle of physics. And so it attracts the particles or dust particles, grains, etc., towards the comet nucleus as the comet nucleus moves through outer space. Well, gee, what happens then? It's kind of like these particles decide to follow the comet nucleus, and then eventually there's a big stream of them. Eventually the comet nucleus is probably thrown out of its orbit or whatever, and left in its path is a stream of meteors, which the Earth would pass through every now and then. And there are hundreds of these. There are hundreds of examples of these. Well, Monday night, we're going to head through the Gemini meteor stream. And I believe on the 20th of this month, we're going to have a lunar eclipse. So at any rate, just a few little items there. So this coming Monday night, December 13th, go out and take a look around 11 p.m. Just look up in the sky and dress warm. If you have a group of people, have everybody look in a different direction, and then you'll see all of them, or you could all look in the same direction and hopefully see some meteors coming through the atmosphere and zipping, causing that beautiful streak. Now, these are not giant meteors. These are mainly dust grain size particles that come zipping into the atmosphere, some brighter than others, some possibly moving a bit faster than others. Okay, what else? Let me look through my notes here. I just wanted to make a quick mention of Calculate Primes. This came up recently as a fan wrote in and said that he was taking a mathematics course and his professor had taken the book and built a JavaScript for calculating prime numbers. And that's good. This type of thing with programming languages has been done using my algorithm, the equation in the book for directly calculating prime numbers, something that nobody thought was possible or that would ever have been accomplished, because it's literally the oldest problem in mathematics going back to the ancient Greeks. Every great mathematician in history has worked on that problem. And finally, a number of years ago, I published the solution to the problem in a book called Calculate Primes, showing you how to directly calculate prime numbers, and not only how to calculate them, but how to see the patterns in the prime numbers, that they're very organized, they're in families. And so what people used to believe were random numbers, now there are amazing, wonderful patterns. An entire branch of mathematics is at its birth because of the understanding of prime numbers. But the point I wanted to make here is that the first thing that a lot of people try and do is, oh, I'll get a computer and I'll calculate all the prime numbers. Well, it's really non-productive, because once you get up to these huge numbers, that's fine. And it would be great if you're hacking into computers and breaking encryption codes or transmission firewalls. That would be one thing, that would be one purpose for calculating all these numbers. But without doing that, you can understand the nature of the prime numbers with simple analytical equations. Once you understand how to generate the prime numbers in groups and in families, you can literally generate the prime numbers using very simple analytic equations. And that is the families of prime numbers. So at any rate, that's the only point I wanted to make, is that a lot of times people, when they see the calculate primes result, they immediately think, well, I can get a computer and calculate all these. Well, the whole point is that you no longer need a computer. You can determine all of the prime numbers by analytical means in calculating using equations. So I'm just throwing that out there. The Calculate Primes book, by the way, just went through its most recent printing, and I have to go into the next printing of that. Wow, it's just how time flies. And, of course, it comes with a DVD lecture in the front cover. So it's not only the book describing it, it's also a lecture where I explain the true nature of prime numbers and all of the implication. It's very proud of that little book. But at any rate, on to the next topic. And let me reiterate this. And I'm not doing this as a scare tactic. I'm just simply giving reality that, as I said at the beginning of the show, I became a distributor for Mountain House freeze-dried food about a month, 2 months ago, 3 months ago. I don't remember when it first went up. Actually, quite a number of months ago. And just in this past week, received a notice from Mountain House. This is an official notice, so I asked them, can I release this on the air? And they said yes. As of right now, Mountain House freeze-dried food is rationing its food. As I said, the warehouse that my shipments come out of is fairly well stocked, should be into the future, and is a fairly high priority on the list of getting continual product from Mountain House, and we will continue to get product from Mountain House. It's just that it's going to come on a set basis. It's not going to they are not going to increase production. Remember, this is all organic, non-GMO, non-genetically modified food. So the product that they have is extremely good, but it's going to be literally rationed because of the demand that has come in recently. So here's what I would suggest if you're thinking of ordering. Go ahead and put in your orders, and we will keep you posted as to when the orders will ship. And they should be within a number of weeks, depending on the order. So the situation, that's all I can tell people. But all I would say to people is simply get in the loop and get your orders in. And the sooner they are in, the sooner they will be put in the delivery loop, and you will get your orders. But the situation with the passage and the imminent passage of the S-510 bill limiting organic gardening, and that's clearly what that bill is targeted for the small gardener who would sell to grocery stores or small limited production places. It's called the Food Safety Modernization Act. Woo, this is for your safety out there. The government is interested in your safety, but what they're really interested in is preventing anybody from growing their own food. Administered under the TSA, the Transportation Safety Administration. Man, in this country, I can't believe, can you imagine the founding fathers of this country seeing where this is going? But at any rate, I don't want to dwell on that, but just go to the webpage, JM, as in Mary, CC, SCI.com, 7 letters, and all I can say is get in the loop. And now the other situation, you know, England has a problem in completely shut down. I've heard it said that the economic cycle of England is at a stall. It's completely stalled. In other words, if you have a business, you depend on spare parts, or you depend on maintenance, or you depend on something else, product or whatever, in this, the people can't get their products, and so then they supply other people. Well, they can't get their products, and this is a big cycle. It's like the cycle of life, but it's an economic cycle. The cycle of economics in England is completely shut down. And also I want to mention that we get the Dalton water filters. I get them ultimately from England, where the factory is in England. But there again, there's a good supply of filters in the warehouse. And we will continue to have them. If it ever gets to the point where they're not available, I'll simply take the links down on my webpage, and they simply won't be sold anymore. I did take, remember the pre-filter? I sold that for a while. I don't have a problem with supply of the materials. It's just that the demand for that product was so rampant at the beginning that I had to shut it off so that we could keep up with the demand and, in a sense, rationing that product. That pre-filter product will go up for sale again here shortly, probably after Christmas, to give us a little breathing room to get everything out that's on the dock right now. But it takes a little bit of time to package each one of those. And so, but the pre-filter, the universal pre-filter that I started selling last, I think it was in August, I actually had to take it off the sales page because that would allow us to catch up on that particular item as far as shipping and everything, which we are doing. But the point is that when that goes up for sale, if you're interested in that, make sure you buy it right away, because when we get a certain number of orders, we're going to stop, pull it down again, and just fill those orders so that we have control over this. That's what Mountain House is doing also. To keep control over their production, keep high quality, and keep it going out at a constant rate, there's no decrease in the amount of food they're producing. The demand has simply skyrocketed. And so, as I said, that's going to continue. We're still going to get the products. We're still going to ship them. But if you like to eat and you want the best food on the planet, in terms of survival food, just remember that dehydrated food breaks down in high temperature. You can't allow it to freeze, and you typically don't get meats with dehydrated food. The freeze-dried is what I've determined. That's the only thing I sell. It's the only type of viable survival food that I would touch with a 10-foot pole. So at any rate, enough of that. I'm going to go on now and talk about hurricanes, climate change, and individual storms that have come through the British Isles and the Northern Atlantic. And just remember that this is serious. I'm not kidding. There's an article. Let me see if I can find that article. It should be in front of me in my pile of notes here. Here it is. This came from from the United Kingdom itself. Forecasters warn Christmas could be canceled as cold weather grips the United Kingdom. Once-in-a-lifetime cold snap threatens to tighten its grip on icebound Britain and cancellation of Christmas. This is not a joke. This is a real headline. But the other situation with England is that I don't think that they're going to come out of this before summer, which means that they probably won't have crops this summer in England. This is an extremely serious situation. It is not being covered by any of the political leaders of the world. It is not being addressed in the news media. What is going on here? This is, and we're heading into, let me just reiterate something else. In the years 1645 to 1715, so this is back in the Middle Ages, 1645, the year 1645 to the year 1715, there was a mini ice age around the world. And we know about the temperatures and situation around the world because of the British Navy recording data, weather data all over the world. So it was well known that this was a worldwide event. But the sunspot count shrank down to almost nothing for a period of almost 50 years. Well, we are now into about year three of extreme low count on sunspots. And every time there's a teeny sunspot that's on the sun, the astronomers jump up and down and they go, oh, there's a sunspot, you know, and they try and make a big deal out of it. But we are way, way behind in the solar cycle. And it's just not coming back at the rate it should. We had a flare, which can happen at any time, and all of a sudden everybody goes, oh, here we are, back to normal. No, we're not back to normal at all. But for that 50-year period from 1645 to 1715, the 60-year period, that the world experienced a mini ice age. And that included Europe, England, etc., and there was a lot of starvation. I remember seeing a special on this where the people who held the grain in the Scandinavian countries were the bakers. They would buy up large amounts of grain, bake the grain into bread, and then sell it. There came a point at which they no longer sold bread. The price rose, and the public complained. And then finally the baker said, there's only so much left, it's just enough for our immediate needs, and we're not going to sell any more bread. And the grain actually ran out in those countries, and there was mass starvation. But the point is that we could be heading into a Maunder minimum. It's interesting that we're getting a severe winter. New York State in the Northeast right now has experienced nothing but severe cold weather and snow for weeks now. And this is going on. The other day I saw a special where someone around Buffalo said, and of course Buffalo, New York, always gets a lot of snow, but they said, this is ridiculous. We've never seen this. It snowed for days and days and days on end all around the New York, the Great Lakes, Eastern Great Lakes area. So at any rate, this is all going to push back, possibly limit the amount of growth in terms of agriculture for this summer, and certainly they're going to have some major problems in England, the British Isles, Scandinavia, and Northern Europe. So this reflects back into the United States, where we are already seeing food tighten up. Mountain House, the biggest distributor of freeze-dried food, who also supplies the military, going on rationing their products so that they can maintain their distributorship at an equitable level. And now I want to go through a bunch of these storms that have hit Northern Europe. In the year 1362, there was a southwesterly Atlantic gale that swept across England and the Netherlands, and northern Germany as far as south as Denmark, killing 25,000 people and changing the coastline. Now, can you imagine a storm that's powerful enough to change the entire coastline? And killing 25,000 people back then was a large number of people. That would probably be the equivalent of 25 million people today. A large population died because of this storm, January 16th, 1362. But the thing is, one might say, well, gee, historical storms have occurred in England, and therefore what we're experiencing now is just a standard storm, once every 100 years storm. No, this is very different. The big storms that rolled across Northern Europe and the British Islands that I'm about to talk about were what I call himmikanes, or Northern Atlantic hurricanes, you might call them also, but basically high wind cyclonic storms that were hit at a certain time, but then they went away. They didn't last weeks and weeks and weeks. They didn't bring untold amounts of snowstorm and freezing cold. No, they were just a storm that passed through with high wind, a good amount of moisture, and Then they went away. That was it. They didn't linger for weeks and weeks. Here's another storm, the October 11th and 12th storm of 1635, the Burkhardi flood, known as the second Groot Mandrakan, hit the northeast England or northeastern Europe, drowning 8,000 to 15,000 people and destroyed many of the islands in that area, including the island of Strand. Now, once again, the year 1634, a tremendous storm moved through, and I can guarantee you that if you look at the history, if you could get a history of solar activity at that time, or of planetary alignments, electrical alignments, etc., that could cause this, or possibly comets that came through the solar system and added that needed electrical attachment to the far reaches of the solar system where you get these tremendous storms, you would find that these were caused by some designated reason. Remember that a couple months ago, we had the comet move through Comet Hartley, and remember Comet Holmes back a number of years ago. Many times we've witnessed where comets came in alignment with the other planets and Earth, and along many times with a new moon passing, giving us tremendous storm conditions. Here's another storm, November 26, 1703. Severe gales, force winds hitting the south coast of England. And now just note here that they talk about just the south coast of England, indicating that this was like a hurricane, localized in its major effects. And I'm sure it rained and it had winds and who knows, possibly tornadoes in the far reaches of the storm, but it was the heavy part of the storm was concentrated enough so they could say southern England. Not exactly what is going on today, where you have all of England covered with snow, all of England in the deep freeze, and not coming out. Let me just quick read a couple of these other storms. Early January 1839, hitting Ireland, killing hundreds of people, rendering hundreds of homes uninhabitable. And then we have the winter of 1850. High tides stripped away surf and sand that had covered the Neolithic settlement at Skara Brie in Orkney. So anyway, these are great storms. Let me just go through a couple other ones here. December 28, 1879, also hitting Scotland, the Eyemouth disaster, October 14, 1881. So what I'm saying is that these, look at the dates there. It doesn't say from mid-November to December or through the entire winter. These are just specific dates. So what you see in these severe windstorms that have passed through the British Isles and Northern Europe is that these were individual hurricane-like storms. They passed through, they took a day to pass by, they went on their way, and that was the end of it. Then the sky cleared and people had to recover, of course, and the damage was probably very severe, but it was only lasted a day. What we're seeing today is weeks and months at a time with no end in sight. There's no visible means or mechanism to get this Gulf Stream moving again so that the British Isles can warm up and get the warmth that they need from that ocean current. The possibility that this is somehow related to sunspots. The sun has cooled recently, so all of these effects possibly happening at the same time, possibly contributing to the devastation that we see in England. But I'm very afraid for what is going to happen here, because let's take a look at Haiti and the relief effort in Haiti. All of a sudden, there were concerts. Everybody had to get their name in lights and sing a concert, sing songs for aid to Haiti. Well, okay, that was great, but I haven't heard any people singing for Haiti lately, and the situation there hasn't changed. The point is that there can be a big mustering of help initially, possibly, But after that, the thought goes away, and you can't just keep bringing vast amounts of food into something the size of Haiti or a place the size of England and do this on a continuing basis. We don't have the resources in the world. India is another place, or China, where the storms will move in and millions of people are displaced by a single storm. We just don't have the resources to move in and help this. Now, if it were a single storm like these other major storms that I was talking about, sure, you could come in, help them out, because you know tomorrow the sun's going to be out, the sky's going to be blue, the rain has stopped, and the wind has stopped, and things are going to be better. But in the case of England, this is not going away. That Gulf Stream is not going to pick up and keep moving, and they are not going to have crops this summer from the looks of things right now. They've run out of fuel. They've already used their allotment of road cleaning energy and facilities. They've already used that for the entire winter already. So how do you... They had people, 100 people caught in a train out there. Nobody could get to them. So I have not seen any follow-up stories on a lot of the stories I saw coming out of England. Just a quick mention, and I forgot, I'm sorry I forgot to mention this, when I talked about the sales on my page, this is still going on, that if you, and this is especially related to the freeze-dried food, because people are buying that in quantities, $800, if you buy $800 worth of any combination of items, you get a free mini, you get a free mini water filter, Dalton water filter. If you buy $1,600 or more of any combination of products, you get a free plastic high-density polyethylene Dalton water filter. And anything over $2,400, you get a free stainless steel water filter. That's with these purchases. So, and then people are doing that. But I just wanted to mention those sales are still there. And by the way, we're not selling any of the food really by mail order, just because the quantities are too large. At any rate, it's best to simply buy it online. And the time frame for checks to clear, all of that, it's just very cumbersome. So at any rate, I just wanted to mention that. Now, back to the storm situation in England. As I said, this is not going to change. This is not going to go away. And the ocean conditions are simply not going to change. I don't know what's going to happen with England. In the northern British Isles, Ireland, Denmark, the Scandinavian countries, northern Europe, all the way into Germany. I really am not sure what's going to happen. These are extremely large population centers, and it's very clear. I talked about the oil spill, the BP oil spill, back in when it first started. I believe it was it last April. I said there's a way to cap this and a way to capture that oil, but it's very clear that this that the efforts being made at that time and the ongoing efforts were to let that oil continue to spill. There's no question that it was an intentional effort to keep the BP oil spill blasting into the Gulf, and that is what, without any doubt, is causing the lack of warm water going up to England. If it wasn't a predetermined man-made event, then the lack of response to it was a man-made event. And by the very nature of that, you can say that, yes, this was a orchestrated destruction of the climate to prevent the English islands from surviving in the way they're normally allowed to survive due to that ocean current. So just the logic of the situation, the fact that Obama didn't respond, the fact that he didn't let companies come in that could have cleaned that up, the fact that the techniques for capping that oil and harvesting it and putting it into refineries where it could be used. There were rigs out there that could separate the oil away from the water with 99% efficiency. And the entire response has not been sufficient. And a little too late, I just am amazed at how the British Petroleum has purchased the top spot on Wikipedia, so that when you go and do a search on the BP oil spill, the first thing that pops up is the page written by BP Petroleum telling you how wonderful they are and what a great job they're doing with the cleanup, when the oil continues to spill in the Gulf as we speak, continues to cause destruction, and continues to force England into a future which does not look promising at all. So, at any rate, as we go into the Christmas time here, the following a couple weeks heading up to Christmas, what I would like people to do is sit down and reflect on where you are going. Where are you? How are you going to take care of yourselves? And just remember that this world doesn't have to be the way it is right now. It's through the greed and hatred, literally, of a lot of people in control that demand their control on top of above everything else. The situation is very clear. If they let people live freely and without all of the burden, then the leaders would lose control, because people would have a way of maintaining their own lives. They would have a way of maintaining their own lifestyles. And that is not the case. So through science, through technology, through the very bizarre use of the science and technology, they are controlling the world through energy, through food, controlling food so that only certain people are allowed to grow food, or to put food into the food chain for human consumption. Very much you have to sit down and think about where you're going to be and where your loved ones are going to be very shortly. I'm running into about a minute to go on this show, so first of all, just want to wish everybody happy holidays. Take it easy. These shows are not easy to do, because I would rather do a show on science, talking about the wonderful conditions in the solar system and how we can use those to benefit mankind. But that's not the world we live in. It's the world we live in has been turned upside down and inside out by people who really should be taken aside and put out into a capsule in outer space and shot into the heart of the sun so they never return. Anyway, make sure you visit the webpage, jmccsci.com, short for jmccsci.com. And I'll be back next week doing a little bit more on the Christmas star. I want to keep that as a central theme. And just remember to breathe deep, relax, and know that you can make it through all of this. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night. Boosh.